the idea that it's impossible to think without presuppositions, without some assumptions, he suggests. Thinking is not possible. It's inevitable and necessary to have presuppositions or basic assumptions in order to think and reason and that sort of thing. And we've reached the kind of the middle point of this chapter is where we ended last time. And so let's kind of pick up there. This section, he says, God is the beginning of wisdom, knowledge, and morality. When we appeal to the word of the living and true creator of heaven and earth, when we appeal to the word of the personal God, the unbeliever doesn't want that kind of evidence, right? So they say, well, we're based on evidence. He says, well, so are we, right? But right. They reject our evidence, right? He says when the unbeliever calls for evidence, he wants something impersonal, logical, and scientific, something that deals with utility or usefulness, mm-hmm. Of a person's belief. And he says if we're going to prove Christianity to be true, we must do so over here in their space, right, in this supposed neutral area, right? And so the unbeliever doesn't want the word of God to be evidence upon which to rest his argument, right? No, nope, that's not what we're, that's not, can't be counted as evidence because that's what we need to prove is what he's going to tell us here that the argument is.
Right, right. Prove to me the resurrection happens. Well, here's a video of it. Well, I know that's not it because video cameras didn't exist back then. Okay, well, what would you like in order to show this? Well, I don't know, but this isn't it. And we go on from there. So right. we're saying, okay, well, let's take a step back and say, how can you account for the things that you're asking as evidence? And can you live consistently within them? Or do you not have a basis for even those starting points? So Julian Huxley, he had a book called Religion Without Revelation. Mm. Well, that's interesting. And he wrote these words. He says, quote, I believe firmly that the scientific method, although slow and never claiming to lead to complete truth, is the only method which, in the long run, will give satisfactory foundations for belief, and we quite assuredly at present know nothing beyond this world and natural experience.
Wow, so that's quite a mouthful, right? Right? Bonson tells us that what Huxley is showing us when he says this is that he's openly displaying his own notice, faith commitment, right? With its prejudices against Christianity. Notice, Bonson tells us, he says, on the one hand, the scientific method cannot give complete truth.
Right.
So he admits it, right? But on the other, he turns around and says, but based on the scientific method, he completely rules out knowing anything beyond the natural world. Well, how can you have it both ways, right?
Right.
Can't tell us the complete truth, but we know this, mm-hmm. right? That right. this is true. Well, how do we know that,
right? You encounter an angel, your hand passes through him, and you go, well, I can't test this, so clearly nothing is happening.
Yeah.
And so you just have to live with that. Okay. That's not exactly what would happen. Why does Huxley count out the kind of evidence that is offered by Christians for their faith? Why does he disregard revelation as a source of information about God? It's what Hume tries to do. He says, oh, there's only kind of two ways in which to get information in. One's kind of the scientific method, and the other is relation of
those ideas. Things.
Yeah, kind of sneaking in a little bit of logic, and so he doesn't assume, or he doesn't allow for revelation to come in. Things like my name is this person because it's been revealed to me by my parents that this is my name. but that is a source of information. Huxley here disregards revelation as a source of information about God. Because Huxley has a faith commitment and devotion to naturalism, he is committed fully to the natural scientific method, and so he does not want any revelation, which makes it super simple. Here's the only way that we can get information and nothing else.
That's
okay,
right.
So I don't have to think logically. I just do my tests. I experience things and make my conclusions from there. If I come up with a phenomenon which kind of goes against that, then me being the great scientist that I am will not fight against the theory that has my name on it, that won me the Nobel Prize, and I'll allow for that new explanation to come into the field of ideas, and I won't at all fight with any other scientist that holds to it. That's what I'll do. So he's fully committed to the naturalist scientific method, and so he doesn't want revelation. But does he have a reason for not accepting revelation? Does he have a reason for not having faith in what we have faith in? Yes. The reason is that he has contrary faith. He has a different type of faith.
All right. And so Ponson tells us the war really then is between, notice, faith and faith, right? The war is not between reason and faith. It's between faith and faith. I don't mean he tells us that faith is just an arbitrary leap. He says it's one kind of reasoning process. That's what he means here by faith against faith. One kind of reasoning process over against another kind of reasoning process, both of which want to use logic, right? Both of which want to use our senses, right? So rationalism, empiricism. Both of which want to make things work in this world, so kind of a utility, that sort of thing. But one of which admits a word from God while the other doesn't, right? So those are, you know, the some distinctions there. That's the distinction. So it's a faith, right? Huxley has a faith, just like the Christian has a faith. Right. Huxley believes that the naturalistic world is all there is, and so he doesn't allow for anything else, right?
Right.
The believer says, yes, there is a natural world, but there's also a supernatural world, right?
Yeah, so let's go back to the name scheme. You can't rely on the testimony of your parents because they're biased, or I don't accept them. So, all right, you have government documents. That might be a case. Well, that's kind of testimony, though, so... and an appeal to authority, we definitely can't allow that. You've always been called that. Well, okay, so you have memories of it. I guess we can accept that, but you don't really have any confidence from age 5 onward that your name has always been that. Other people tend to call you. In fact, everybody calls you the same name. Well, there's the everyone. Well, you know,
everybody else believes this.
Everyone
right?
else. Well, that's only at this point forward. You could have changed your name. You could be lying, and so. It doesn't allow for your parents to come in and say, I have a relationship with them. I've experienced a trusting relationship with them. They seem to want what's best for me. They've sacrificed financially. They've given me their kidney. So if they've given me their kidney, maybe they've given me their name. And so here are my parents. Here is their written testimony, affidavit, claiming this is my name. And it's stamped, sealed, and witnessed by other witnesses who, upon perjury and torture, are testifying. Well, okay, but I don't accept that testimony because it's revelation. it's from this unknown source that I can't take a lock of their hair and kick the tires type deal, you know, and so.
He'd say, well, how do you know your parents don't exist? I mean, they're not alive. Yeah. So how can I verify that?
Right. And so this revelation is something that everybody accepts in certain other areas. And we're just not applying it here because we don't like the implications of it. Yeah. That's what we're trying to get to.